This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to talk about bills, that CR that failed. Just pause on that. Who actually writes the bills? We're going to talk about everything from border walls, Joe Biden's been non-functional, surprise, surprise, all that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, let's talk about some good news, some bad news. Sometimes we have to deliver some hard truths around here. We're about to do that right now. So we were all wrestling for the past 48 hours or so with that 1,500-page continuing resolution monstrosity through Congress. I hated it. You hated it. We were all mad about it. Okay. Elon Musk got involved. Vivek got involved. Donald Trump got involved. People started getting loud, getting public. The reps in Congress, the senators, they all heard you. They heard your anger. And then you had these powerful people, Elon, Trump, saying, this is bad, this is bad. We can't do this, this is bad. And so by the time we all went to bed last night, the news of the day was the CR had been stopped. They were tabling it. There's all kinds of talk now. They're going to do a clean CR. Maybe, maybe not. We might get a government shutdown. Okay, okay, all right. So let's have a sober talk first before we get to what I really want to get to. It's not dead. All right. The bill itself is not dead. Now, as that one was written yesterday, it may be dead. You got too many bad headlines out of it. People were looking through, wait a minute, we're funding biolabs, vaccine mandates. So there was so much garbage in there. That exact bill may be dead. But don't think for a second these people are going to get 48 hours of your outrage or my outrage, and they're going to say, well, okay, I guess the corruption's over, guys. Let's just do it the right way now. Doesn't work that way at all. What Eric Burleson was going off on about the last bill, he's going to have to do this again on the next bill.
So what are your thoughts on this here? Have you seen the text at all?
It's a total dumpster fire. I think it's garbage. This is what Washington, D.C. has done. This is why I ran for Congress to try to stop this. And sadly, this is happening again. I think that it's shameful that people that celebrate DOGE coming in, and yet we're going to vote for another $1 billion to be added to the deficit. And so it's ironic.
What does this mean for Speaker Johnson's future?
Personally, I'm disappointed. I think that he can do better. He can communicate better. The fact that we haven't seen the language today and we're supposed to vote on it this week is unacceptable.
Now, that last part is what I want to talk about before we get back to the bill. The bill that will return. As we speak right now, they're in the back rooms figuring out how to make another ugly, corrupt sham of a bill more palatable for you and me. They don't want the peasants getting all uppity like we did yesterday. But let's talk about the they, you see. Pause on Congress for a moment. You see this? This is the Anti-Communist Manifesto. I wrote this book along with my friend, co-author Nick Rizzuto. Now, no, don't worry, I'm not selling you my book right now, although it was a national bestseller, but let me just show you something really quickly. In my book, there's about, right before we get to the author's acknowledgments and all that, there's about 277, depending on how you want to count it, pages of actual content. That's stuff in the book, right? 275, we'll just call it that. But then, if you flip to the back of the book, I'm going somewhere with this, if you flip to the back of the book, there are all these pages of citations. I don't know if you can read that. citation after citation. They're even numbered, 161, 167. We got this one from this book. In all, there are 271 citations in this book. A citation. There's practically a citation per page of this book. Why? What is it? Well, if I put something in the book, if I cited something at all, fact, a little tidbit, I, as an author, I'm not an author, I wrote one book, but I, as an author, am required by my publisher, by everybody, to write down exactly where that little tidbit came from. If I say something like, one in every 4,000 lobsters is blue, I think that might be correct, by the way, but if I say something like that, and I put that in my book, I have to write down in my book where I got that information, and I have to be incredibly specific about that information. These citations are not just, I heard it from a guy. There's one. This is citation number 102. I have the man's name, Steve Wisnowski. I have all the information of where exactly this can be found. It even includes a link where you can click specifics. This is for a book. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm proud of this book. I like the book, but it's not important, is it? It's a book. Hopefully it was informative. Hopefully you laughed, but it's just a book. So back to Congress. 1,500 pages. And we screamed about it all day yesterday. You did as well. All the horrible things in there, the vaccine mandates, the congressional pay raises, the funding of brand new bio labs, more payment for government censorship, all the ugly things in the book. Let me ask you something. Who put those things in there? Let me pause for a moment, because I know what you're probably doing right now. You're probably saying something like, lobbyists or staffers. Okay. Well, that doesn't work for my book. When I have to make a citation, when I have to cite something that was put in the book, I have to be very, very, very specific. Names, locations, where you can find the information. You see, I've been doing media for about 6 years now. About 6 years ago, I left the real world and started doing this for a living. It's not even really a job. But in that time, I've gotten to know many, many, many people in the House of Representatives and the Senate. Senators, reps, their staffers, I know a lot of them now. They call me, they text me. You have any idea how many times I have asked these people who work in Congress, who writes the bills? Well, I've asked them a lot, and I have never, ever, not one time, been given a name. What I usually get almost every single time is, I don't know. They don't even know. And if I get anything beyond, I don't know. Now, these are from friends of mine, so they're not lying to me. If I get anything beyond, I don't know, you know what I get? Lobbyists, K Street. But back to my point. For an unimportant book, I have requirements to be specific about who said what, where. We're talking about bills that govern the most powerful country in the history of the world. We're talking about bills that take your money out of your wallet and hand your money that you worked hard for out to this person and that group and this thing and that thing. This is your money. A critically important bill that governs the United States of America, and to date, I have not talked to a single person who can tell me who put those things in there. And isn't that pretty important information? Wouldn't you agree? Because I would like to know who is responsible for putting vaccine mandates in the CR. I don't want to hear staffers. I don't want to hear lobbyists, K Street. No, 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 no. Someone sat down. Someone typed that up. Someone came up with the idea and put it in the bill. I want his name. I want her name. I want to know who they work for. I want to know their background. I want to know everything about the people who are actually writing the laws that govern this country and spend our money. Who are these people? What are their names? Who put in the CR, who is responsible for putting in there more funding for the government censorship apparatus currently being sued for violations of the First Amendment. I don't want to hear staffers, lobbyists, K Street. That's not a name. Staffer is not a name unless the guy goes by one name like Prince used to do. What is his name? What is her name? Who are they? Where do they come from? Where do they receive a paycheck from? And nobody can answer this question to me, and nobody out there considers that to be a problem. And then when you combine that with the emotional blackmail you get from the people in Congress who try to convince you that it's absolutely critical we pass the bill, unless you hate hurricane victims.
House Republicans have now unilaterally decided to break a bipartisan agreement that they made. House Republicans have been ordered to shut down the government and hurt everyday Americans all across this country. House Republicans will now own any harm that is visited upon the American people that results from a government shutdown or worse.
He sounds super upset. It's going to hurt the American people. He doesn't even know what's in the bill. And he doesn't even know who wrote it. And it's not, look, it's not just Democrats either. Mike Johnson probably did it worse than Hakeem Jeffries. He stood up behind that microphone, has no idea what's in the bill. He probably can't name for himself a single person who authored anything in the bill, but we have to pass it for the farmers.
This was the conservative play call. We don't normally like what's called a continuing resolution, a CR, but in this case it makes sense because if we push it into the first quarter of next year, then we have a Republican-controlled Congress and President Donald J. Trump back in the White House, we'll be able to have more say over the funding decisions for 2025.
No one knows. Don't you think it's a problem that we don't know the name? We have laws governing the country, and no one knows who writes them. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Speaking of Mike Johnson, we have unbelievably low testosterone levels in this country. You see Mike Johnson, and then you know that. Testosterone levels are off a cliff. Look at Mike. We drink estrogen. Mike is made of estrogen. So what are we going to do about that? How do we turn that around? Well, take some natural herbal supplements from Chalk. You don't have to go stabbing needles into your arm. Natural herbal supplements. Chalk has a male vitality stack for the fellas, female vitality stacks for the ladies. There's a huge discount for the month of December. Go take advantage and avoid becoming Mike Johnson. 20% increase in your T levels in 90 days. Go to chuck.com/JesseTV and make 2025 the year you feel better than ever. We'll be back.
To Dan Crenshaw's point, Elon Musk is spreading fake news. On this, he is fake news.
And he relies on people to reply to him and tell him what's up. He says, you are the media now. That's his message on X. And yet that really leaves a lot to be desired.
Who is in charge? Because I've been saying it for a while.
Yes, you have.
I've been saying that I think Elon Musk believes he's president. I do.
Well, you've been calling him vice president.
I've called him vice president. Yeah. I called him president because I don't know what JD is doing. I hardly ever say, I don't remember last time we even talked about JD.
You're right. He's planning the presidency when they get rid of Trump.
So you think it's Musk, Musk Vance?
Possible.
Hey, you know who? Stay away from the stairways. Because, you know, people put the leg out to trip you going down the stairs. Watch out.
I can't Imagine how much smarter this company would be if those morons weren't on television every single day. Instead, you should be watching The Mel Kay Show. Joining me now, Mel Kay, host of The Mel Kay Show, authored the book Americans Anonymous. Mel, what bothers these people so much about Elon Musk? Is it the billionaire thing? Is it aligning with Trump thing? They're really not that mad about this bill going down in flames. None of those morons know what's in it anyway.
Yeah, and it's amazing also with all these years of Soros and Hansberg Wiese and all the money that's come from their side that they have a problem at all with anyone getting involved. I think that they really don't like that maybe their gig is up. Maybe all these years of criminal activity behind the scenes might actually come to light. And I think that they hate anyone that is in any way a threat to them. And frankly, all I see in them, including, you know, Whoopi or Seltzer, is fear. And they should be afraid, frankly.
What are they afraid of? I just find it so odd. Now, I get the partisan Democrat-Republican thing. I'm as partisan as they come. But are people really that afraid that the government's going to stop scamming them? I would think even Democrats would be okay with that.
Yeah, they would. They would, wouldn't they? I think they're afraid of us. Honestly, I think that they're afraid because X has opened it up that the people actually have a voice and it's making a difference. It made a difference in the Trump election. It made a difference just this week in the CR. This is really about, I don't think they're mad at Musk. I think they're mad at the American people waking up and seeing that we actually have a voice and a choice and it's been denied to us for so long. And now actually we can step up and say and organize for the first time without them being the gatekeepers. That's a real problem for them.
It is a real problem for them. Is it just a matter of that social media has gotten so powerful, Mel? And I'm glad it has, because like you said, X, Twitter, I mean, I still can't get on board with the X thing. But anyway, Twitter, X, it has completely changed how people seek out information. It's changed how our powerful people get their own information. You can get on X and scream at your senator. He may see it. He might even respond to you on there. Is it just that you don't need CNN anymore?
No, I think it goes deeper than that. I think this is about the global public-private partnership that runs our country, like they're the parent company, and we're all just lucky to live here. And the narrative being lost doesn't hurt, you know, the people per se. It does hurt the global billionaire class that is basically running the controlled demolition of our country, our economy, and everything else for their own gain. And I believe the plandemic was a real overplay, and too many people woke up, and now people are skeptical of what they hear. All the fact-checking backfired. Now people see a fact-check from PolitiFact, and they wonder what they're hiding. So a lot of the programming that's been going on for decades, the mind wars, cognitive warfare, this military-grade manipulation of all of us is being destroyed because we're actually asking questions and skeptical and looking at different sources. Their fear is that we will be so informed and so empowered with knowledge that we will no longer look at them or give them 1 ounce of authority. They are not above us. They have no authority. And in America, it's we the people that decide. And they don't like that they're finally having we the people have a voice. And they don't like it and they're not used to it.
Mel, how do they handle things from here? Because I totally agree with what you just said. I think that they have had so much control for so long. They don't know how to live in a planet where they can't control it. But these are not introspective people. They're not decent people. These are evil demons for the most part, bunch of commie scum. They're not just going to go home and just wash their hands of the whole thing. They're going to come up with a new plan. What's it going to be?
Well, I think we have to look really closely at who was involved in Crossfire Hurricane. They have the most to lose in this situation, including the Clinton team and campaign. But don't forget, lawfare has become the name of the game. And there is a group of people, Norm Eisen, Mary McCord, Andrew Weissman, all the people at Brookings Lawfare. They already have been planning. Mary McCord said it in an interview a year ago that they, and Cass Sunstein's back there working, and Mark Elias, that they were planning for contingency if Trump won, to make sure that he couldn't get anything done. And I believe that they're back behind the scenes. They have not accepted that Trump won. Don't fool yourselves. What they are doing is coming up for lawfare, for everything to try to stop Trump again. And it's the same people. And because they haven't been held accountable for what I think is sedition and treason, 2016 to date, they're going to keep going down that road because the lawfare crew and the corrupt intelligence community that works for the parent company, they have a lot to lose, including trillions of dollars. and their platforms and everything else. So they're going to keep throwing these lawfare suits. But I think the people are game to it, and we have to start naming names. I don't want to hear that the FBI is corrupt or the CIA is corrupt. If the institution is corrupt, then nobody's corrupt. I want to know the exact people that are involved, and I want those people held accountable. Finally, I mean, since 1963, they've gotten away with not only covering up every crime by our government against us, but then promoting the people involved. We need to end that. And that is what they're most scared of, is losing their own freedom. And I believe that many of these people, they are names that are known to everyone, have been on the front lines for 10 years. They believe that they are super class. They are the stakeholders of America. And I think they're about to get a real rude awakening.
Yeah, this is outstanding. Mel, it's funny you brought up the names. In the opening of this show, I was screaming about that CR. Everyone's talking about 1,500 pages, and it's dead now. Of course, we know it's not dead. They're going to bring it right back. But nobody can ever tell me who writes the horrible things that go into these bills, Mel. Every single time I ask a member of Congress, a senator, a staffer, I am told lobbyists. I am told I don't know. I am told K Street. K Street is not somebody's name. What is his name? What is her name? No one can tell me who wrote down that we need additional bio labs and snuck it into the CR. I, as an American citizen, deserve to know that person's name, motivations, who they work for. I have every right to know that.
100%, and I think it's even more important than people realize, because it's think tanks and NGOs. Many of those think tanks and NGOs have opaque funding. So where is this really coming from, and who's paying for it? Don't think that these giant lawsuits coming from the outside, from Eisen States United or Crew or the 65 Project, are cheap. No, they're being paid for by the globalist billionaire oligarchy, people like Reid Hoffman and Soros and everything through Arabella Partners and all of that. What we need to realize is that they don't believe that we, and it's not left and right, Republican and Democrat, this group of people that have, you know, embedded themselves, I look at it now as the Bush, Clinton, Obama, Biden world order is ending, and they're terrified. So what they're doing is they are coming out in front, and we need to call them out by name, and we need to also make sure that every single bill that is put forward alone with the sponsors, with the think tank, and with the research. And that should honestly be done with technology we have now. That should be done for the American people, and then we have time to read the bills, and then we get in touch with our senators and our congresspeople in a tangible way. That's why we have to start local. We have to take back our states, and we have to make sure that we have local communities of like-minded folks that are willing to say, listen, this contract, this no big contract that my school board went under, it is a globalist UNESCO contract. We're not doing it. Where's the data going? Where's the infiltration in my local community? The swamp is not in D.C. The swamp, as JFK told us in 61, had infiltrated instead of invaded America. It is in everyone's backyard, and every American citizen needs to get up and to have some righteous indignation to take their country back where they are, because we can do a lot more where we are that affects D.C. than if we keep yelling about lobbyists. It should be illegal, but until we get there, let's pull out the roots in our own backyards.
Mel, I just may let you host the show for the rest of the night. That was freaking awesome. You come back anytime. Thank you, ma'am. All right. We're not done yet. Joe Biden's not a functional adult. I know, breaking news. But Wall Street Journal printed something today that made it sound like it's breaking news. Joining me now, Brianna, or not now, in a moment. I guess almost now. Couple minutes. Brianna Lyman's going to join me in a moment. Before she does, let's save a baby's life. Did you know you could do that by watching television? Well, I guess there is one extra step. You have to buy a woman an ultrasound. It's our greatest tool in the fight to save the babies. You know, we think it's laws and Roe and all that stuff's fine, but the greatest tool, the tool that makes that mother know she's a mother, is an ultrasound. She'll convince herself it's a clump of cells. Everyone's telling her to kill it. But once she hears that heartbeat, she chooses life almost every time. And that's what preborn does. They give her that ultrasound for free. They introduce her to her baby. Do you want to do that for her? If she does it, she'll choose life. They do almost every time. $28 buys her that ultrasound. Preborn.com/Jesse is where you give. A baby needs you right now. We'll be back. Well, I have some breaking news for you. Well, me and Brianna Lyman have some breaking news for you, and you are going to be blown away by this, but Joe Biden is not a functional adult. I know. I woke up this morning and I picked up the Wall Street Journal and I read that and I was stunned. He seemed so sharp, so full of vigor. But apparently, now everyone's willing to come out and talk about it, and he's not been functional, something we all knew for the last 4 years, which begs the question, who exactly is Commander-in-Chief right now? Joining me now, Brianna Lyman, elections correspondent with The Federalist. Okay, well, that's not good. It's not exactly news to anybody, but who is running the country?
Well, it's not Joe Biden, and it's also not Kamala Harris. And I think that this report really underscores why Kamala was so disqualified from running and being our president. Because when you see that your president, as vice president, is this mentally incapacitated and suffering from some kind of illness or disability, or maybe it's just severe old age problems, she sat back for 4 years while this country has descended into turmoil, rather than getting the cabinet together and saying maybe it's time we either invoke the 25th or convince him to step down. That is a woman who has no spine, no backbone, and has no spot in the White House ever.
Yeah, and by the grace of God, I don't think she's ever going to get there. Okay, so you are probably a lot more tuned into the swampiness of D.C. than I am. If you had to guess, did nobody say anything because they just didn't want to upset the apple cart? Or did nobody say anything because they like being able to just have a bunch of filthy communist staffers run the country while that old cadaver goes out there on camera and takes all the slings and arrows?
Yeah, they like being able to pull the strings. You know, the same way that nobody believes Mike Johnson wrote the CR, it's the same way nobody believes Joe Biden has been making all of these decisions. And that obviously begs the question of who's writing the CR and who's writing Biden's executive orders, who's making these decisions for our country, which it looks like we're not going to get the answer to. I do hope that a Trump administration or a Republican Congress, if they can find some spine and backbone, will hold hearings about this massive cover-up, because it's not just some small cover-up, right? This is the leader of the free world, so to speak. And this is just as bad as what Edith Wilson and Woodrow Wilson did back in, 1919, when he was basically not running the country, but his wife was. You know, both deserve recognition, and Biden deserves to be, or the people around him deserve to be held accountable for what they've done to this country.
I think his wife deserves maybe the most hatred, certainly not the most responsibility when it comes to the country, but you and I can sit and argue why a chief of staff would want to keep Joe Biden there, why this comms guy, this girl wants to go work at MSNBC. But his wife saw the worst of him, the Joe Biden you and I will never see. She saw him in the morning. God only knows how he was functioning at night, if he really has dementia. If anyone has any experience with that, you know how they do at night. She saw the worst of him. And she was completely pushing this man to run again. What kind of a soulless witch did Joe Biden marry?
Yeah, that actually is really sad, because when someone reaches a stage that Joe Biden has clearly reached, where he's not able to make big decisions on his own because he's either sleeping, he's not really aware of what's going on, he should be able, like any person, to depend on their spouse to help guide them through this part of their life. And Jill Biden instead decided to maintain the reins of power. It's why she's the one who's constantly seen at these events, traveling, what have you. And people are supposed to not question it. And another big problem with the story is that the propaganda press, right, the corporate left-wing media, they have spent years calling people like you and I conspiracy theorists for suggesting that Joe Biden wasn't all there. But now that the election's over, here and there they can let drips and drabs out about how he's either unfit or no one thought, according to the New York Times, I think it was yesterday, no one really thought that Biden thought he could serve another 4 years. But that wasn't their tune for the past 3.5 years. So the media is also part of the problem here.
Brianna, where do Democrats go from here? I'm zooming out. The country as a whole, where do they go from here? It's naive to think they're never going to come back. Every party convinces themselves of that as soon as they win the White House, but that's not the way it works. So they're going to regroup. They're going to come back. How, though? Further left? Younger? I don't see a great bench. Rear Admiral Buttigieg is not going to be able to win the Rust Belt swing states. Who's it going to be?
I think they're still figuring that out. You know, there are some people of the party, like people like Chris Murphy, who recently said after the election, it's time for us to kind of look inward and see what happened, why we're so out of touch with the American people. And yet I see people on the Democratic side in the past few days saying, we have to pass this dirty CR bill, right? No mention of, well, we can just do a standalone bill, or we can just have, you know, standalone aid relief and then just have a continuing resolution clean, right? So if they're willing to do those things right now, I think it shows they're not willing to look internally, because if they looked internally, they would feel the pulse of the nation and see that Americans want to have things like a clean CR bill, standalone bills to help Americans and North Carolinians, not these puff pieces that they're trying to ram through right now. So this is the first indication that Democrats aren't serious about their promises to look inward and figure out what happened.
Brianna, let's talk about this Fannie Willis thing. She's disqualified now from prosecuting Trump, but people are saying this is it for her. This is it for her. This is how these scumbags keep getting reelected. This is how Letitia James gets elected. Alvin Bragg. This is what you do. Adam Schiff. Look, he got a vault from being in the House to the Senate because using your office to break the law, to do horrible things, is how you get promoted in Democrat circles in blue cities and states.
Yeah, and it's a shame. Fannie Willis had a Republican contender. I'm drawing a blank on her name, so I apologize for that. But people of Atlanta, they could have had a serious district attorney, someone who actually cared about the rising crime rates in Atlanta. And instead, they reelected someone who used lawfare to target a political opponent. And Fannie Willis's fall from grace is very reminiscent of that we've seen from people like Jack Smith, right, who's also dropped their case or had their case shot down by Eileen Cannon. And I think this is a good reminder of why Donald Trump is such an important figure. Because on July 13, when he stood up after nearly being assassinated and said, fight, 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 he didn't just mean fight for his life to not be assassinated, but he also meant fight the lawfare, fight all these tactics that are being used to take him down. And this is what fighting gets you, right? Fighting gets you Fannie Willis being disqualified.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Brianna, thank you. Come back soon. All right. We got a bunch of illegals in Colorado. They're pulling people's fingernails out. We should probably figure out what's going on. Before we go do that, let's talk about getting you a good night's sleep. Nothing better than a good night's sleep. I love to wake up in the morning and know that my day is going to be good. Or with those days when you wake up and your eyes feel like sandpaper and you know it's going to suck, get some Dream Powder. Dream Powder is natural. It's got natural things in it. It's a cup of hot chocolate. I take a little cup of milk, warm it up in the nuker, put some Dream Powder in there, mix it up. It's cinnamon chocolate. It's delicious. And just as I'm sitting there reading a book, watching something with the wife, I just sip on it before bed, and then boom, I go out. And I sleep so good, but then I wake up feeling great, and you can feel like that every single day. Does that sound appealing? Are you tired of the tossing and the turning and the misery? Go to shopbeam.com/JesseKelly and start sleeping like a baby. We'll be back.
I had a discussion with an individual from the White House, and that occurred back on September the 23rd, I believe. And that person basically told me that, hey, once these immigrants get across the border, that's all we really care about. And to me, that's a problem. That's a huge problem, because we have individuals that come to a country, they get dropped off into a community, they have absolutely no infrastructure, they have absolutely no support, they have absolutely no guidance from the federal government about what to do, how to live, how to survive. And this is the ramifications of that activity. This is the ramifications of not monitoring what's occurring and how it's occurring and who is it occurring to. And so Aurora, we are now in the process, as many other cities throughout this nation, of trying to pick up the pieces of an incredibly bad system that was in place.
These people really just opened up the border on purpose and brought in a bunch of murderers and rapists. They did it on purpose. And do remember that. None of this was a whoopsie. They didn't trip and fall and oops, we left the border open. The people did this to us on purpose. And now people are getting their fingernails pulled out in Aurora. Joining me now, retired ICE Special Agent Victor Avila. Victor, okay, so people are having their fingernails pulled out in Aurora, Colorado. Do I have that right?
You do. I call them cartels. That's what I call them, because that's exactly what these guys are. And one thing I want to mention here, Jesse, is that all of a sudden, they're interested about it. By the way, I have a lot of contacts in Colorado. I used to live there. And they've been concerned about this for years. And the Aurora Police Department and the mayor ignored their cries for help about these guys taking over the apartment complexes and terrorizing the community. I'm glad they finally accepted it. But why does it have to happen after more people are victimized and tortured? This is reminiscent of cartel activity. And this is the difference I want people to understand with Tren de Aragua. They're not a gang. Stop calling them a gang. They are cartel. They're organized criminals. They have very strong ties to the Maduro regime. These people have strong ties to Hezbollah and Iran. I tell you that because I've been talking to a lot of my intel friends that are telling me to put this out because that's how serious this group of people are. They're here with a very different agenda, and this is a national security issue, Jesse.
Victor, can you expand on that a bit as much as you can with what you're allowed to say? People hear Venezuelan prison gang. Sorry, Victor, I know you're going to yell at me for saying that, but that's what they were known as, a Venezuelan prison gang, but ties to Hezbollah. How does that happen? Why? What?
Yeah, this goes back to obviously the Maduro regime. It actually goes back to Hugo Chavez, and a lot of these guys are what they call Chavistas, Hugo Chavez sympathizers. Meaning they have a different ideology. We're talking about socialism. We're talking about communism here. We're talking about the relationship that Venezuela has with Hezbollah. Yes, Hezbollah, terrorist organization. And Iran, yes, Iran is heavily present in Venezuela. But who else is involved? Who else is friend with Venezuela? Mexico is. Cuba is. And so China is. And so you have this bigger picture that we have to really pay attention. These happen to be the soldiers that are executing the orders of these nations in our country, literally killing us, committing crimes, murdering, raping our daughters. This is what these Tren de Aragua people are. And this is a very different category that I know January 20th is right around the corner, but man, it can't get here soon enough.
No doubt about it. Victor, can you explain maybe why Venezuela became part of this group? Those are some heavy hitters you just named in there. And Venezuela, is this just about the oil? Is this about their proximity to us? Why? How did Venezuela become a hub for all this garbage?
I think it comes down to political ideology. We are so separate from them. And yes, it has to do with oil. Yes, it has to do with money. It has to do with trade. It has to do with a lot of things. But here, it has to do with, I think, ideology, what they want everybody else to follow. Initially, if you remember, Jesse, when the Venezuelans started coming in 4 years ago, a lot of people were saying, oh, they're escaping socialism. They're going to actually be here supporting the conservative movement in the United States. And I was the first one of the first ones to say, no, actually, no. What they're bringing here is the only thing they know, and that's the culture that they were brought up in of hating the police, of hating the government that's for the people, and supporting the communist regime of their country. That's what they know, and that's what they have come here to try to instill in our communities. And we've actually seen them do it physically, doing it by actually hurting them. And so this is where I think we have to focus. I know the intel community in different agencies is at least already focused on this. So this is going to be a big priority to take these groups down.
Victor, is this something we're going to be able to do? January 20th, Trump comes in, Tom Holman, all these things. It sounds great, and I want them all rounded up. I want them all gone. How ingrained in their communities are these groups already? Is it realistic to think in a year, in 2 years, Tren de Aragua is a thing of the past here in the country?
Absolutely. And I say that without any hesitation. This is what you're going to see. This is, and I'm glad you said that time frame because it's not going to happen overnight, but it is going to happen. We're going to go community to community, Dallas, Texas, San Antonio, Aurora, Colorado, Chicago, everywhere in every state where they have gathered and established their roots. We're going to go after them there. Listen, this is why we need the help of the locals. The state and local police is so important because they know where these individuals live. We need the cooperation. from these mayors and these governors, despite what they feel about immigration. This is not a political issue. This is about public safety. This is about national security. We want to cooperate. The federal government worked hand in hand with the county jails where a lot of these guys are encountered. So we could then, as soon as we know where these guys are at, go after them and not only detain them, some of them might be facing charges. And then after they do that, get removed back to their country.
Victor, finally, we're getting word there's another migrant caravan, surprise, surprise, racing towards the border, trying to get there before Trump comes into office. How quickly is Trump going to be able to force Mexico's assistance to stop all this? We all know how this works when Democrats take over. Mexico knows they just have to whisk these people through the country as fast as possible. And of course, we'll take them all in like suckers.
Yeah, this what you're describing is the ant operation. If you haven't heard this before, a few of my colleagues and other reporters have reported about this ant operation of separating these groups from 5,000 down to 100, a group of 80, 100, 120. And that's what you're seeing on a daily basis show up in Texas and New Mexico and Arizona. And so they're still coming in. It hasn't stopped for a second. The people are just coming in. You're just not going to see a tremendous large numbers in one location. As far as Mexico, let me tell you, I'm really concerned about what step Mexico is going to take. They're kind of hesitant. They haven't taken the Canada approach. We saw what Trudeau is doing and the response that Canada gave. Mexico's kind of hesitant a little bit, and I'm really concerned about that. But one thing is what the government does. The other thing is how the cartels react. And that's what I'm interested in, because the cartels have a stronghold on the country of Mexico. And I really want to see their reaction if they're going to allow this to happen, because, Jesse, they've had a free-for-all in the last 4 years. This is the best time to have been a cartel member. And so all of a sudden, it is going to stop. And let me tell you, that's going to be the easy part on the border, is going back to enforcement. You're going to see a dramatic drop of people even trying to come in. How is the cartel going to react to that? That's where we have to be prepared.
No doubt. Victor, thank you, my brother. I appreciate it. All right. Let's do Light in the Mood next. All right. It is time to Light in the Mood. And I'll tell you what, I think it speaks for itself.
CRFI. If you're like many women, you've been to a birthday party or a small office gathering, an event that's meant to bring people together. There's swinging tunes, some adult beverages, and good convo. And then it comes time to cut the cake, and someone decides to ruin everything.
Oh my God, that slice is huge. That slice is bigger than Beyonce's paycheck. Can you cut me half of that?
A cake-related fatphobic incident, or CRFI, is that moment when it's time to eat delicious cake and it's interrupted by a moralizing impulse. Inevitably, there's always someone at the party who has to declare publicly that their slice is too large, and that the person who's cutting the cake, almost invariably a woman, must do some disproportionate amount of labor in order to accommodate their need to feel superior.
I hope you didn't think that was a parody. That's a real person. She's the new fatty czar in San Francisco. I'm not even kidding. She's getting paid with taxpayer money to just be a fatty advocate. I don't even know what to say, but that's the most San Francisco thing ever. Also, go subscribe to our YouTube channel before I let you go. We do fun stuff, funny stuff, short stuff, longer stuff, Q&A on there, youtube.com/@JesseKellyDC. You can just scan that little QR code right there on your phone. Go subscribe. It's free. All right. I'll see you.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth
and help you figure out this crazy modern world.
About something about a comedic tone.
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.